Let's check anyway. She came out from behind her desk. She was a foot shorter than me. She was wearing a dark skirt and a dark shirt. Fancy shoes, which I figured would go equally well later with her cocktail dress. I put the Beretta's muzzle against her spine and bunched the back of her shirt collar in my left hand and moved her forward. She felt small and fragile. Her hair fell over my hand. It smelled clean. We checked the left-hand office first. She opened the door for me, and I pushed her all the way inside and stepped sideways and moved out of the doorway. I didn't want to get shot in the back from across the reception area. It was just an office, a decent-sized space, nobody in it. There was an oriental carpet and a desk. There was a bathroom, just a small cubicle with a toilet and a sink, nobody in it. So I spun her around and moved her all the way across the reception area and into the right-hand office. Same decor, same type of carpet, same type of desk. It was unoccupied, nobody in it, no bathroom. I kept tight hold of her collar and pushed her back to the center of the reception area, stopped her right next to her desk. "Nobody here," I said.
"I told you."
"So where is everybody?" She didn't answer, and I felt her stiffen, like she was going to make a big point out of not answering. Specifically, where is Teresa Daniel? No reply. Where's Xavier? No reply. How do you know my name?
Beck told Xavier. He asked his permission to employ you.
Xavier checked me out?
As far as he could.
And he gave Beck his okay?
Obviously.
So why did he set Paulie on me this morning? She stiffened again.
The situation changed.
This morning? Why?
He got new information.
What information?
I don't know, exactly. Something about a car.
The Saab, I wondered? The maid's missing notes?
He made certain deductions. Now he knows all about you.
Figure of speech. Nobody knows all about me.
He knows you were talking to ATF.
Like I said, nobody really knows anything.
He knows what you've been doing here. Does he?
Do you?
He didn't tell me.
Where do you fit in?
I'm his operations manager.
I wrapped her shirt collar tighter in my left fist and moved the Beretta's muzzle and used it to itch my cheek where the bruising was tightening the skin. I thought about Angel Dahl and John Chapman Duke and two bodyguards whose names I didn't even know, and Paulie. I figured adding Emily Smith to the casualty list wasn't going to cost me much in a cosmic sense. I put the gun to her head. I heard a plane in the distance leaving from the airport. It roared through the sky less than a mile away. I figured I could just wait for the next one and pull the trigger. Nobody would hear a thing, and she probably deserved it. Or maybe she didn't. Where is he?
I don't know.
You know what he did 10 years ago?
Live or die, Emily, I thought.
If she knew, she would say so, for sure. Out of pride, or inclusion, or self-importance, she wouldn't be able to keep it in. And if she knew, she deserved to die. Because to know and to still work with the guy made it that way.
No, he never told me. I didn't know him 10 years ago.
You sure?
Yes.
I believed her. You know what happened to Beck's maid?
A truthful person is perfectly capable of saying no, but generally they stop and think about it first. Maybe they come out with some questions of their own. It's human nature.
Who?
No, what?
I breathed out. Okay, I said. I put the Beretta back in my pocket and let go of her collar and turned her around and trapped both her wrists together in my left hand, picked up the electrical cord from the phone with my right. Then I straight-armed her into the left-hand office and all the way through to the bathroom, shoved her inside.
The lawyers next door have gone home, I said. There won't be anybody in the building until Monday morning. So go ahead and shout and scream all you want, but nobody will hear you.
She said nothing. I closed the door on her, tied the phone cord tight around the knob, opened the office door as wide as it would go, and tied the other end of the cord to its handle. She could haul on the inside of the bathroom door all weekend long without getting anywhere.
Nobody can break electrical wire by pulling on it lengthwise. I figured she'd give up after an hour and sit tight and drink water from the sink faucet and use the toilet and try to pass the time. I sat down at her desk. I figured an operations manager should have some interesting paperwork, but she didn't. The best thing I found was a copy of the Keast and Maiden order, the caterers, 18 at $55. Somebody had penciled a note on the bottom, a woman's handwriting, probably Emily Smith's own. The note said, "Lamb, not pork." I swiveled her chair around and looked at the wrapped dress on the coat rack. Then I swiveled it back and checked my watch. My 10 minutes were up. The note said, "Lamb, not pork." I swiveled her chair around and looked at the wrapped dress on the coat rack. Then I swiveled it back and checked my watch. My 10 minutes were up. I rode the elevator to the garage and left by a fire exit in the rear. The rent-a-cop didn't see me. I walked around the block and came up on Duffy and Villanueva from behind. Their car was parked on the corner, and they were together in the front, staring forward through the windshield. I guessed they were hoping to see two people walking down the street toward them. I opened the door and slid into the back seat, and they spun around and looked disappointed. I shook my head. Neither of them. "Somebody answered the phone," Duffy said. "A woman called Emily Smith, his operations manager. She wouldn't tell me anything." "What did you do with her?"
"Locked her in the bathroom. She's out of the picture until Monday." "You should have sweated her. You should have pulled her fingernails out."
"Not my style," I said.
"But you can go right ahead if you want. Feel free. She's still up there. She's not going anywhere."
He just shook his head and sat still.
"So what now?"
Duffy asked.
"So what now?"
Cole asked. We were still inside the utility truck. Cole, the judge advocate, and me. Frasconi had taken the Syrian away. Cole and I were thinking hard, and the judge was in the process of washing his hands of the whole thing.
"I was only here to observe," he said. "I can't give you legal advice. It wouldn't be appropriate. And frankly, I wouldn't know what to tell you anyway."
He glared at us and let himself out the rear door and just walked away. He didn't look back. I guess that was the downside of picking out a royal pain in the ass for an observer. Unintended consequences.
"I mean, what happened?" Cole said. "What exactly did we see?"
"Only two possibilities. One, he was ripping the guy off, plain and simple, classic confidence trick. You drip, drip, drip the unimportant stuff, and then you hold back on the final installment. Or two, he was working as a legitimate intelligence officer on an official operation, proving that Gorowski was leaky, proving that the Syrians were willing to pay big bucks for stuff."